From the boardroom to the locker room, sport captures the imagination like little else. In this podcast, we talk to the men and women who make the big decisions and those who make the big plays to find out where sport is and, importantly, where it's going. But we do so through the only eyes that matter, those of the fan.
And a very warm welcome aboard the pirate ship, the Rive Gauche, and to the Captain's Table podcast, brought to you by Are You Not Entertained and our great friends at Loch Lomond Whiskies. I'm Giles Morgan. I'm not actually a captain.
I'm the captain.
Or indeed a pirate. But a vague ancestor of my family, Captain Henry Morgan, actually was one. And his family all came from Wales as well. This is a 30-minute romp of a podcast where every week I simply ask my special guests to share their own personal memories of being a sports fan and how that passion has affected and shaped their lives. And ahoy there, my hearties. I hope you've all fared well in the last 2 weeks since we last all met. So, huge news to start. I have a new parrot. My last parrot flew away. She fled her perch, sadly, but that happens. So I have a new parrot who is green and is as yet unnamed. So one of the first things I wanted to do was to ask listeners who gave a toss to help me rename my parrot. And to do that, just tweet me at GilesMorgan71 or even email me at giles@gilesdmorgan.com. with a name for my new parrot, and I will send a bottle of whiskey to the person who comes up with the name that I use on the next show. Paul, my steward, he remains as ineffectual and clumsy as ever, keeps dropping trays, and I fear he may soon be walking the plank. I'm giving him one more month on trial. But far more exciting, the very kind folk at Loch Lomond Whiskies have generously agreed to sponsor the Captain's Table show and joyfully restock the bar. So, unusually for a pirate ship, we now have a full shelf of the most stunning malt whiskies. I think it will be a miracle if any of my guests remain sober or upright, but at least they'll be drinking a classy drink. My guest this week could easily have been a pirate himself, or a Viking. His eyebrows alone put the fear of God into every professional golfer. So I am really delighted and quite fearful to welcome Thomas Bjorn to the captain's table. The Great Dane, as he is known in golfing circles, has bestrode the fairways of professional golf all over the world for four decades. He has come close on a couple of occasions to major championship sets. He's won the Ryder Cup as a player, vice-captain and captain, and is an enormous influence in the development of the professional game as a player's representative and now on the board of the European Tour. I should add that this chat took place just before Loch Lomond Whiskies came on board. So you'll have to forgive his rum choice, which was a dark and stormy and a very good one. Had it been whiskey, I dare say he would have gone for a straight shot, neat, and probably a double. Thomas Bjorn, a very, very warm welcome to the captain's table. Pull up a chair and make yourself at home. Watch out for the parrot. She's got a razor beak and I don't know what she feels about Danish people, but she may have a go.
Aussie, is she? I believe that.
Yeah, she's tough. She's good. Well, very warm welcome. It's nice to see you here. You've been gallivanting around the world for about 25 years playing golf. It's nice to see you in one place for a change.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Good. Well, first things first, I need to get you a drink. And this being a pirate ship of the 17th/18th century, we've only got rum on board. It's just the thing. So I can offer you, from Paul, the steward, a mojito, a rum and coke, a dark and stormy, the captain's secret coconut and pineapple mocktail, or a straight shot.
You looked at me when you said dark and stormy. Was that my personality more than anything that came in?
It felt very
We'll go for that one.
I think you should have a double. I think you should have a double. Very good. Well, we'll get Paul to sort that one out. So, Thomas, you've played golf for, it feels like, decades and decades. It has been, actually. You're old. But I'm sure there was a time before you were Thomas Bjorn the golfer. And I know you're a sports fan and love your sport. What is your earliest sporting memory as a young boy growing up in Denmark?
Well, I mean, I think football is obviously the one thing that all kids take to when they grow up. And I was fortunate as a very young child to grow up next to the football stadium of the team in the town and kind of follow them. So just jumped over the fence and watched them every other weekend. And so that was kind of a thing growing up as a kid. But, you know, the one thing that I really in me sticks out as sporting memories is probably more watching it on TV. You know, you grow up in a world in the 70s with two TV channels and nothing is there. And so you watch everything that's there.
And what did you, what was on? Was it Danish football? Was it?
Yeah, but I grew up in a world of the old English First Division was shown every Saturday on TV. So you kind of grow up watching that. And I watched it and not really picking any teams. You just kind of watched every match that you could. But then there was a moment in 1977 where my dad sat me down and to watch the European Cup final. And we had maybe one of our greatest footballers ever, Allan Simonsen, that was voted European Footballer of the Year in 1977 and went on to play for Barcelona afterwards, played for Borussia Mönchengladbach in that final. I think my dad kind of was, sit down, watch this. I'm going to make you a football fan. I'm going to make you watch the best Danish player and also become a Gladbach fan. And Liverpool won that final 3-1. And it from that day onwards.
Was that the moment?
That was it. And I was only 6 years old, but I've been a Liverpool fan ever since. So it was the moment where I was just like, I don't know what attracted me to it, a six-year-old, the winning team, probably more than anything. But from there on, it was a thing. And then you grow up with it for so
long. Once you're in, you're caught in.
Yeah, and watching that game every Saturday on TV from the English First Division, you know, and 70s, 80s being a kid, you know, it was at least every other Saturday it was Liverpool because they were the best team. And then all of a sudden you run into the 30 year of hate.
But you went through those generations after that of 77 going into the 80s where they had a wonderful side playing very attractive football as well. So that just presumably just kept you going.
Yeah, it was just the thing. And for me, it just became a love for a football team, which is so strange in the way, you know, when you move on in sport yourself, like you understand sport, that you can have such a deep passion and be so frustrated and so happy about something that you on yourself in sports lived through. Even as a kid, as an amateur, you know, I lived through so many ups and downs and moments. And when you put it on another sport and your passion as a fan, all logic goes out and all common sense goes out the window. You just become a passionate fan and you live it as a fan, which is a strange thing, really.
And were you quite unique amongst your mates growing up being in Denmark that you were supporting an English team in the way you did? Or was that quite normal? Did everybody have English First Division football clubs that they were kind of associated with because they were watching on telly?
No, it was normal.
Was
like,
you
would meet up with your friends and watch that every Saturday at somebody's house, and it would be Forest fans, and in early 80s it would be Villa fans, and you know they were all there. Everton fans when you got into the mid, as kids are, you know, you pick up the teams that are doing well, and that was kind of thing. But the Liverpool was the one constant through that.
Well, it's interesting. You and I are exactly the same vintage, and I remember as a kid growing up that, you know, you'd go to the playground and everybody, it was always Liverpool playing someone because they were the dominant side, particularly in the early 80s. If you played football in the playground, who did you want to be if you were a Liverpool player? Who was your idol?
Well, I think Keegan was probably the one that you would look to when I was really young. And then obviously it moved on. And I kind of through my whole life have had players that I really, you know, that attracted me. And obviously Kenny was the one that that changed the view. I think a lot of, he became Liverpool, he became everything it was, and through good and bad, you know, from all the things that happened. But, you know, going from Keegan into Dalglish, and then probably later, obviously, Steven Gerrard became my big hero as a sportsman, really, you know, to take so much on as one player. So.
And when was the first time you got to go to Anfield? When was the first time the young boy got to go through the gates?
He was never a young boy. It was a much later in life. It was not till I moved to England that I got to go my first time.
And do you remember that excitement of going for the first time?
When you build up so many ideas and everything that I've experienced in sports is that everything feels a lot smaller than you think it is. You know, you have these great ideas of how big stadiums are going to be, how big events are going to be, and they often, I wouldn't say they let you down, but they're a lot more intimate than you think. That was probably the one place where I went that it was everything I expected, and it was so much more than what I...
What was the game? Do you remember the game?
I went to a Juventus game in the Champions League. That was my first game up there, and it was pretty special. I'd seen him a couple of times in London, but my first...
Was it emotional? Did you find it a sort of moment in your life to go to Anfield and see the cop, see the scarves, the whole thing? Was it a big moment for you?
Yeah, it was, and it still is every time I go. I there's nothing that, you know, I've taken my kids up there and shown them it, and you can see... They've gone to a lot of sporting events, but you can see that kind of everything that Anfield is, especially on a European night, but in general, everybody gets surprised at how much it is.
Well, you're being rewarded now. I mean, what's going on with Liverpool Football Club in the last season or two has been astonishing. It must be very joyful.
Yeah, it's great fun to watch, you know, when you're such a big fan, it's great fun to watch, and hopefully long may continue.
But it feels that the lesson is for our children and their children in years to come is that being a fan, like if you're a Leeds United fan, is you have to go through the lows to have the highs. It's not just a question of surfing the wave, that the wave doesn't last forever. And you started, as kids do, they tend to... I think the first team I ever heard of was Nottingham Forest, and they were obviously going through their moment. And then being the charlatan I am, I think I probably moved around a bit, as kids do. But at some point you stop, and you obviously... That was what you saw. You saw Liverpool, you saw them in their pomp. You saw them go through great crests of a wave in the 80s, and then suddenly, bang, down it went, because that's what happens. But you remain loyal.
Yeah, you do. For me, it is my one of my big passions away from playing golf. And you know, when you meet people in football, and you know, I mean, I met a lot of footballers, and I met a lot of people that works in football, and you know, it's the one thing that everybody has in common. You can talk about the game, you can talk about what it brings. And you know, once the great thing I think about sports is that when you get on the other side, when people do retire, and when people do, you meet them. And you know, the people that I remember meeting Sir Alex Ferguson the first time, and then it was at the...
He's more frightening than you.
Well, I met him at the Ryder Cup at Gleneagles, and for the first time ever, and you know, you passionately look at a man with not much friendship for so many years. You have nothing good to say about the man you have, and then you meet the man, and it was one of the greatest experiences of my life to meet him. And that shows that when you get past, you know, the little sport that every individual sport is, you know, you meet a great man that's done so much for the game of football. And it just, you know, from a... Sport is sport, and I know that for some people it is a more than that. But when you are a sportsman, you very much realize that we go through the same things and live the same things. And it was an amazing thing to meet a man like that.
Did someone like Alex have any impact on you on your captaincy in terms of the Ryder Cup? Did you borrow into some of the experience of other man managers?
Well, yeah, to some extent, in the way that I probably bought into some of the things that Paul McGinley did at that Ryder Cup, and I would imagine that he picked up a few things. He worked very close with Alex going into that Ryder Cup, but I picked up on a few things of always keeping the kind of the idea of keep coming at them, keep throwing things at them, not think if things are going well, don't think that this is just going to go well. You've got to keep going. You've got to keep pushing very hard. And I think that's, I remember that Paul talked very much about that during that Ryder Cup. And that was also a bit the stuff Alex Ferguson talked to us about, was about how United always kept coming. And that was why he believed they scored so many goals in the last 5 to 10 minutes of a game, because it just kept going. It was not a question of stopping and settling what you had. And that was one thing that I felt that we talked about in Paris at the Ryder Cup. Keep going, keep just throwing everything you have with passion and fight hard till the last pot drops.
Which is a great life lesson for anything in life.
Yeah, it is, because it's it gets the best out of you, and you work hard to get in these positions. Whatever you do in life, when you have worked hard, you get into certain positions, and that's where you got to keep pushing and you got to keep going.
So the young Thomas Bjorn, he had presumably all the posters of Liverpool Football Club up on his wall. Were there other sporting heroes from other sports that you had? I mean, you're a handy golfer. Were you a golf fan as well as a young, very talented young golfer? Did you, were there other sports that you were very into?
Well, you know, you grow up in a period of time, and we very fought. I mean, any period in time has some great sportsmen, but you know, growing up with the likes of, especially Michael Jordan, probably had a big impact on my generation, in that he brought a sport that wasn't particularly popular or interesting on this side of the Atlantic, but he all of a sudden made basketball a very, very cool sport. And the athlete, I think that everybody identified and wanted as a kid to be the athlete. That was Michael.
Have you met him?
I have, yeah.
And what was that like?
Yeah, that's a pretty special moment, because you're standing in front, you meet a lot of sports people and they're great in their sports. Now you're standing in front of somebody that is far beyond that. You know, he's
transcendental in a sense. Yeah,
he sits on top of all sporting trees as being mentioned as one of those people that, and he is everything that I expected. You know, the big smile, the big, you know, very friendly and have great conversations with him. That's pretty special.
And was that nerve-wracking in a sense, meeting him?
Yeah, the first time it is. You're kind of taken aback completely about the when you, because you remember all the things that he's done and the enormity of his sporting figure is you know, pretty much second to none.
Yeah, well, I don't think there's anyone more. Maybe Ali would be the only, those two probably transcend sport globally. I think I know the answer. Sporting Stadium, your favourite one to go as a fan? I think there's only one.
There's only one.
But then there's a critical question. I know that you're a health freak. You've got a six-pack that's renowned around the world of golf. Many talk about it. What does Thomas Bjorn have at the halftime interval when no one's watching? You sneak out to the van and you're starving. What do you eat?
I gotta say, if you go to any football stadium in Denmark, you can go and get a couple of sausages and a couple of pieces of bread with ketchup and mustard, and it is nothing beats a Danish sausage. I'm about to say, but
wow,
sausages in Denmark.
You heard it here first, ladies and gentlemen.
You can have your pies for yourself.
And again, I know how much you love your football. Is your favourite place to watch sport at the stadium generally, or do you love watching at home? Are you? What's your sort of, as a fan, do you love the comfort of your own home, or do you like being in amongst it, in the mix with?
I think it depends on the sport more than anything.
Where do you watch golf when you're not playing? Obviously, you couldn't be playing and watching, but you take my point.
No, but golf is a great television sport. Yeah. It's there, just kind of, and you get to watch everything. I shouldn't really say that it's difficult to watch. But when you're in the sport, you want to know what's going on.
Right.
I don't go to a golf tournament and think, I'm going to go and watch this guy because
your profession.
My great hero. There's not many of those. My heroes don't play the game anymore. They might show up at one of two events, but they don't play anymore. But so for golf, it's very difficult, but I do think it depends on the sport. There's nothing greater than being at a great football game where the atmosphere is.
And do you like
amazing.
Being in the terraces? Do you like being right in amongst it?
Yeah, it's an amazing feeling. But you know, but then again, watching sport on TV, I find quite
therapeutic.
Yeah.
When was the last time you cried watching sport? Have you? Have you? I know you're a hard ass.
I only cried four times to sports, and three of them involved golf, and one didn't involve golf. I cried when Liverpool won in Istanbul. Just the enormity of the event.
Tears of joy.
Yeah, the enormity of what happened was sensational, and I just couldn't believe. And I think because they had had so much grief for so many years, it was nice to see some of those players, and especially Steven Gerrard, lift that trophy. For him, I think it was difficult not to get emotional, certainly as a Liverpool fan. I cried when Adam Scott won the Masters. Adam's wife Marie was very close to is very close to us as a family, and especially my kids. She used to work for us,
so it became a personal thing. Yeah, a friend winning the green jacket hit you.
Yeah, and I cried when Henrik won the Open Championship. Great friend, but also knowing where he came from. And what he'd been through, to see him have that moment was pretty special. And then I cried at the Ryder Cup.
Oh, well, you allowed that, I suppose, once. What's your favourite anthem? Do you sing? Are you a singer?
Well, I mean, my favourite anthem is probably You Never Walk Alone.
And do you give that a good biff?
I join in, but the great thing about singing that anthem for me, I only really ever sing it in the stadium, and there's another 54,000 idiots singing with me, so nobody can hear.
It's not a solo.
No, nobody can hear how bad a singer I am.
Now, you've been lucky. You've travelled all over the world, but playing your sport, and you've been taking you to probably every continent other than Antarctica, I suspect. So lucky you. I imagine you've been to quite a lot of sporting events, but because of your job for so many years, you couldn't get to a lot of things. What's on your bucket list? What would Thomas Bjorn, now that, well, there's a little bit of time off in the global sporting calendar, when things are back on, if you could find a weekend, what would you love to go to that you haven't been to?
Winter Olympics.
Really?
Hands down, Winter Olympics. It would be, just go for a couple of weeks and just watch winter sports. You know, growing up in, and Denmark is by no means a great winter sport nation, but I just love winter sports. I would love to go to one of the nice winter sports places and watch a Winter Olympics. It was just, and it's always been a dream.
And to watch anything, I mean, is it downhill?
But the Olympics is the Olympics. We watch anything, don't we? We'd watch anything with passion that we're not a fan of, but just because it's the Olympics. And that's what makes the Olympics great, is that we'll watch anything, fan or not fan of the sport, just for the sake of it.
Allowed to ski now and do those things now that you've sort of reached the age where you may win a major, but you may not?
I roll down the hills more than I ski down them.
With a good lunch, I would imagine.
Well, like the lunches.
Yeah, I think they're absolutely essential. One of the things that I asked Rory back a few weeks ago when we were bobbing along on this boat was, you guys get to play in pro-ams, and sometimes I imagine it's a real ball ache because you're trying to get ready for a tournament. But from time to time, you're playing with people who might be captains of industry, or they may be other sports people from other sports, or former presidents or leaders. Have you ever played in a pro-am where you've, other than me, where I know what you think about that, that's not frightening, that's just despair, where you've gone, I feel a bit, I'm the golfer, I can hit a ball straight, but I feel a bit overawed by having being with this person because of who they are and what they represent? Because people get so nervous about playing with you.
But for me, it goes back to, I think you get used to meeting a lot of people, but there's certain things where you just like, this is, now I become the little one, I become the fan, I become, and so Kenny, to play golf with Kenny Dalglish for the first time with me, it was like, because now all of a sudden, my golf was so irrelevant. And I remember almost thinking, oh, don't make a fool of yourself with your golf. And you can imagine that he's like, I mean, Kenny's a decent golfer, but he's by no means a great golfer. So, you know, he'd be in awe of what we do golfing-wise. But for me, it was just such a moment to spend. And the great thing about golf is, now you got him for 5 hours.
Yeah.
You don't just meet him and a handshake and how are you? Now you got him for 5 hours. You get to talk about all the things. And by the end of that, he must have thought, I was really, really annoying.
Well, because- I was going to say the first time, I know you know him well now, but you think the first time he met you and thought, bloody hell, this guy is a total fan and just get on and play the golf? Or did you?
Probably.
But you now go to Liverpool a lot, don't you?
Yeah, so I go up there.
When you can.
Yeah.
Got to know him over the years.
Yeah, I mean, I met him and talked to him when I'm up there and see him, but no, like big friendship. But he's just for me, it's like meeting the man upstairs.
Yeah, he really was the real deal. Right, Thomas, we now come to the part of the show which I call the captain's broadside, and that's why I'm going to ask you a series of relatively quick fire questions. We've got nothing to do with anything really, but just sort of answer them as best you can. And we start off, we're on this beautiful, beautiful pirate ship, the Rive Gauche. And obviously we've got the sails ready. The crew are all there. We can sail anywhere in the world, anywhere you choose. Where would you go?
I've been fortunate to be in, to go to the Maldives. If you can take me there, I'll spend a week with you.
Oh my God. That is an exclusive for everybody. Yeah, well, we can definitely get there. It's very straightforward. And we're around this beautiful oak table. And the first night, you get to choose the menu. We lob in the cheese course for free because I love cheese. So what is the Thomas Bjorn three-course meal? We've got a fantastic, nearly Michelin-star chef who can rustle up pretty much anything. But what is your kind of go-to three-courser?
No, I'm very simple with that. I very like, you know, go with a prawn cocktail, a big steak and a banoffee pie, then you've made my day. I know, looking at you, you'll come to that meal, because especially if we're in the Maldives.
Oh my God. We are children of the 70s, 71. That is the vintage that basically has
bad
that
wine
food.
Year.
Yeah, a very bad wine. Yeah, but we can find some decent one. And also, because you're my guest on the Rive Gauche, you get a beautiful ensuite cabin. And sort of stretching the metaphor a little bit, I've managed to design a power shower, even though they haven't been invented. What song would you, do you sing in the shower? What do you sing?
Not a chance.
Really?
Because everybody will jump off this ship and I'll be left on my own. I am the worst singer.
Really?
Anywhere.
Really?
You cannot. And
so have you ever had to sing your national anthem sort of for a Denmark event where you've had to sort of mouth it or lip sync?
Yeah, but it's just the lips going in. There's nothing coming out. It would be a shame for the national anthem.
And you didn't have to sing, I think the Ryder Cup, don't they have a sort of daft anthem? Did you have to sing that?
No. Nobody knows the words to that anthem, I don't think.
I think of all the marketing ideas, that's one that probably could go off the list. I don't know, just thinking. But you're a fan of music.
Yeah, I am a fan of music in the way of I listen to music, but I've got no idea who is singing it, but I'll listen to music.
And so we're children of the album and the 33 LPs. Do you remember your first album that you bought as a kid?
Billy Joel.
Nice.
Yeah,
that's
Billy
very
Joel.
Strong. That's actually
there
the best we've had.
Bit of Piano Man's never going amiss.
No, that's very good. And do you remember your first concert?
I'm not a big concert man, but I used to go to some concerts in Denmark, as you do when you're a kid with bands in Denmark. But I never really go to big concerts.
Yeah.
I went to George Michael once. That was a big experience. But I'm not a big fan of the environment of a concert. It just doesn't suit me, really. I'm a bit more comfortable than that.
And what was your first car?
Oh, I had a Vauxhall.
Did you?
Yeah.
And how old were you when you got your hands on it? This moment of escape and being an adult.
18, 19, yeah. That's a big moment in any boy's life, that.
When did you turn pro?
Not till I was 21.
Okay, so yeah. this got you from amateur events and rattled you around Europe.
Yeah, rattled around everywhere and that. I jumped in the... I remember, I actually had it for quite a long time. I remember winning a Challenge Tour event in the middle of Switzerland and just threw a trophy in the back and drove all the way home to Denmark on my own in it, which was scary up through Germany.
And being that young boy, you have a gift for golf, and before you turned pro, it must have been tough for you to go from event to event to event, you having to be presumably subsidized by parents and friends, etc. At what point did you know I'm good enough to make this?
You don't never really know, I don't think. You never have that, like, you got to, there's always a bit of luck involved in sports, that you get to moments that where you kind of either stumble the right way, or you grab a moment, or somebody doesn't grab a moment where everything just kind of lays it out itself for you. But I never felt like, I've never felt in my golfing career that I have arrived. I think also that's one of the dangers, especially in individual sports. Like you build these building blocks on top of each other. Oh, this has happened, and now it's this, and now it's this. But you keep seeing all these blocks that are lying there that you can keep putting on top. So you never get to stop and go, oh my God, all the things that you've achieved is unbelievable from where you came from. And I always talk about where I came from as a kid and growing up in a country that had no golfing history, that there was no right to be a good golfer. And to fight all those walls that were being put up in front of you, you had to break them down and get through all these barriers was something that was quite hard to deal with. So,
and did you feel that very keenly? You know, a lot's been talked about the Ryder Cup, and it was wonderful. And for those privileged enough to watch it live or on TV, you talked about crying at the moment, you know, a huge moment of euphoria, which I think everybody felt if you're European, hopefully not if you're American. Great. Did you feel very Danish at that point? Was there a moment where you kind of went back to your roots, which is, I'm the European Ryder Cup captain, and these wonderful fellas have taken the trophy. But was there something about that went back to you, which is, I'm also doing this for my country?
Yeah, there is. I think you go back to a moment of feeling like you start going through when you get into a moment like that, being a Ryder Cup captain, where it takes you away from playing the game. It takes you into a thought process and because it's quite a long period, you are Ryder Cup captain, there's a lot of moments where you think back of who you are and what you are and what you stand for. So that moment when takes you back to, this is who I am, this is what I've done, and then you go through it all and you sometimes have to justify to yourself why you're a Ryder Cup captain, because there's a lot of other people that will say that you shouldn't be, and a lot of people will also back you and say you should be. But so you're trying to justify, why am I in this position? So you all of a sudden go all the way back to who you are,
who you really are,
and where you came from. And so you go through that whole emotion, and that will always take you back to your roots. That will always take back to, for me, being Danish and how I grew up and all those memories of just playing golf for fun, where now it's a job.
Right at the beginning, it was what you did with love.
That's what, that's the one thing I think with sports people, sometimes so much is put on them to say, have an opinion and being this and being that. But when you grow up as a kid, all you just want to do is play golf. You know, I all the privilege that people talk about and all these things that comes with being a professional sportsman, sometimes you're like, yeah, but I didn't ask for it. I didn't ask for these things. I just wanted to play golf. Now I became successful. Now I all of a sudden had to be all these other things that I've never been equipped to deal with these things. All I can just do is, well, golfers play golf, or for footballers play football, or whatever it is. And also, that's the same in the business world. Sometimes we got to be very careful that we don't put too much on people just because they're good at one thing. That doesn't mean they're good at a lot of other things. The things that I look at in sports is, like, the better you are as a sportsman in your sport, the more people listen to you in that sport. Just because you're good at it, playing the sport, doesn't mean that all your opinions are right. Mm-hmm. You can still be
absolutely wrong, but you have the ability to play golf. I think it's fascinating that, and this being a pirate ship, and go with me on this, we're obviously built for smuggling. Is there something along that journey, this amazing journey of golf, and indeed watching Liverpool Football Club, is there a treasured possession that we could put on board and then put in a big chest somewhere and keep safe for you, which is something that you hold very, very dear to you, which is something just within yourself that you're most proud of?
No, but I go there's a thing that always comes in my mind when I when we now talk about going back to my childhood and going back to who where you come from. My mum and dad had a bird bath that was standing in the back garden, and I was standing there for hours and hours and hours and chip golf balls into this. And it became very much part of my identity as a kid. That was my dad would always be like, well, there he is again out there chipping away. And there was always that kind of thought of, well, if you can do that for that many hours, it must lead to something. So if we can...
We take the bird bath.
If we go back to Denmark...
Does it still exist?
Yeah, it does. It actually stands now, because when my mum and dad sold their house, it now stands in the golf club I grew up in.
Oh, that's a wonderful story. Well, we're definitely going to bring that. We need quite a bit. How tall is it?
It's not that tall, but it's very heavy.
I can carry it. I'm terribly strong. Well, Thomas, it's been a massive pleasure having you on board. Thank you so much for joining me around the captain's table. And it's lovely to see you. We're heading off to, where do you say, Maldives?
Maldives.
Together for a week.
Yeah.
What could possibly go wrong?
Double bed, you and me.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Well, it was just a joy to have Thomas come on the show. And Loch Lomond Whiskey wanted him to have some treasure of his own. So they're popping in the post a bottle of their 12-year-old single malt whiskey, which I suspect will last a night or two. But even better news is we don't want the listeners of this podcast to miss out on the whiskey either. So Loch Lomond Whiskies are very kindly giving away a bottle of 12-year-old single malt for you as well. So to be in with a chance of winning this, head over to their Twitter page at Loch Lomond Malts and follow the instructions to enter. Many thanks for that. I would love to hear from listeners, and thank you for those who already have. All you have to do is tweet me, I think that's the expression, on Twitter at GilesMorgan71 if you want to give me feedback on the show, discuss new guests, or just sort of share with me your thoughts. It's always good to hear from people. On the captain's table next time, I am joined by Scottish royalty, another member of the Scottish sporting royalty, former British Lion and Scotland captain, Gavin Hastings, who now spends far too much time on the golf course. But he also spends quite a lot of time watching his son, Adam, who now plays for Scotland, and who is showing the sort of precocious talent of both his father and his uncle, Scott. Really exciting to have Gavin on the show. But until then, I learnt that one should keep your sails trim, your rudder straight, and avoid icebergs wherever possible. See you soon.